I think when you're doing something, you have to enjoy it. You have to, you know, that's what separates the normal people from, you know, from every industry. The people that are really passionate are the ones that usually go far or do something more. Or, you know, a lot of people say like, oh, slay your heroes and stuff like that. But the whole point of Hero Bitcoin is that he's just an everyday guy and he's saving the world with Bitcoin, you know? All you have to do is hold Bitcoin to be a hero.
Welcome to Live with Bitcoin, where we delve into the human side of Bitcoin by focusing on Bitcoiners' personal transformations and life stories. I'm your host, Vivian. Thanks for tuning in. If you like and want to support our mission on shining light on the human side of Bitcoin, remember to subscribe to this channel, leave a comment, or sign a few sats from link in the description. Today, our guest is Hero of Bitcoin. Hero, born in Australia, he's a Bitcoiner who has created a Game Boy game for Bitcoiners called Hero of Bitcoin. Hero of Bitcoin, the game, is a story inspired by Bitcoin culture and is set in the beautiful Bitcoin sovereign nation of El Salvador. You will be taken to iconic places such as Bitcoin Beach, the volcano, and more. The game follows the journey of a young man called Hero, a new Bitcoiner, who journeys to El Salvador wanting to help the Bitcoin fight on the front line. He will need to help President Bukele and other Bitcoiners to ensure shitcoiners, bears, bankers, and more do not stand in the way of Bitcoin adoption. Welcome, Hero.
Thank you.
I've been following you ever since the beginning phase of you making the game, so it's been really amazing to see how this project have taken shape and form. And now you've launched it officially. I'm sure it has been a process to see a concept taking shape and be the creator of it. Let's dial back before you make the game. How did you first get into video gaming?
I first got a Super Nintendo when I was a kid. And my cousin before then had an original Nintendo. And I had a Game Boy. And I grew up with all the best games, you know, all the Mario and Zelda, and yeah, I was lucky enough to get all the major consoles, and I'm now a collector of old video games and stuff. So it's my passion that I've had since I was been a kid. Yeah.
What about video games that you think made you so passionate about it?
I think it's just the fun. You know, you can play with a friend, you can play by yourself, and you know, something that makes me so passionate is that unlike other things, you know, when you go back to play it again, you're playing exactly how you played it as a kid. So the nostalgia is right there. It's like you've gone back in time to that moment.
What's the link between gaming and Bitcoin, and how did you find yourself in the world of Bitcoin?
Well, the link between the original Game Boy and Bitcoin is that it's the OG, you know, it's the beginning for me for gaming. For Bitcoin, it's the beginning of the financial system 2.0 all over again. You know, we're starting again from the ground up. So I thought the Game Boy translated perfectly into a medium for Bitcoin, you know, especially using pixel art. I feel like pixel art is a great medium also for Bitcoin, you know, using bits.
I had the chance to play the demo of Hero of Bitcoin. I don't have a Game Boy, so I played the demo on your website. The intro of Hero of Bitcoin is this ordinary guy realizing it's harder and harder to just survive, basically, in a fiat society, keeping up with his job. And I delve into some of your other interviews in the past, and you share that the inspiration was actually yourself, and this is how you have felt pre-Bitcoin and creating the game. So could you share with us briefly what was your Bitcoin story, and before Bitcoin, how were you making sense of this reality?
My Bitcoin journey, I started off, I think, similar to most people, and that's why it was just easier to base the character off myself, because I think my journey is a very similar one. You know, I'm a millennial, so we've experienced the problems with trying to buy a house and, you know, a lot of inflation and whatnot. And I just first discovered it just through a mate at work and who was talking about it. But I bought Bitcoin first, but I delved, like most people, into the altcoins. And, you know, after a while, you just realize it's all a scam. You just don't feel good holding that stuff. So after a while, I discovered, yeah, Bitcoin only. Bitcoin, if I want a better future for myself and, you know, our future children, Bitcoin's the only way. Yeah. So from there, my journey went to, I was just absorbing all content on, you know, YouTube, you know, you know, listening to Michael Saylor, who came out a bit later, but, you know, Max Kaiser, and all them, Stacey Herbert, all the early adopters of Bitcoin who just shared all their content. I was absorbing it for about a year, just nonstop. Straight after work, I would just be listening to podcast after YouTube video after.
Do you remember any specific one Bitcoiner that gave you the most insight and conviction?
It was probably Max Kaiser, because he was just so adamant on Bitcoin only. And I was like, why is there people that, you know, I always see people go from altcoins to Bitcoin, but I never see people going from Bitcoin to, it was extremely rare, but see people go from Bitcoin back to altcoin. So I was really curious about that, and he was just so sure about himself. But it was definitely a feeling of guilt. I was feeling a guilt for a while, thinking, you know, I've got all these altcoins, and I just feel like I'm just, you know, I'm just there to make a quick buck and dump it on people. You know, it just didn't feel good with myself. So yeah, that was probably the pivotal moment. It was a slow progression.
That's interesting, because sometimes when we're trying to do what's best for us, and a lot of people go into the cryptocurrency world trying to find a way to invest and make money. And then I guess, like, did you kind of realize the rock pulling nature of a lot of the altcoin projects? And that's why you had this internal, like, guilt, basically. It becomes a moral thing that if you know that this is the case and you're still doing it, then that's, you know, somehow what will hurt our conscience, basically. Is that how you felt back then?
Yeah, definitely.
That's interesting. And you're right. And sometimes if we know that this is hurting other people and then we choose to do this anyways, then of course that makes us part of the evil group, part of the problem. So I'm definitely seeing how you're channeling that experience into the decision to be Bitcoin. Are you Bitcoin only these days now?
Yeah.
Probably, right? So I can see how you're channeling this experience into your decision to become Bitcoin only, and then to make contributions in the Bitcoin community in a way that's through creativity and through games, and you're bringing a different perspectives into what's available in the collective narrative in Bitcoin. What has been the most significant personal transformation you've experienced since becoming a Bitcoiner? Like, how have you changed from before and after Bitcoin?
I think that I'm much more aware of everything that's going on in the world. I think that I was very driven by just what's on the media, you know, everything, you know, the narrative that's going on. And now I second guess everything. I think when you get into Bitcoin, you have to learn so many different subjects. It's probably like the greatest university, because you have to understand so many different concepts to understand Bitcoin. So it just made me study like crazy, and I was just really interested into it. And I'm not usually that sort of person. I was never really a big study person. So I think that was my biggest change, just learning about every different concept about money, about society, about, you know, government policies and everything.
What made you want to be studious for all of these subjects that you weren't previously interested in?
Well, first of all, it was probably modern, you know, for the money when I first came in. But then as you learn, you're there for the revolution, you know. So that was the main driver, it made me feel good. It made me feel inspired. And that's why I wanted to give back in the form of this game.
As part of the gaming community and the Bitcoin community, do you see any commonalities between video gamers and Bitcoiners?
growing up as a gamer, we were sort of born for this. We're born to, you know, we've had in-game money, purchasing things digitally, where we've adapted to it. Whereas, you know, the older generation don't have that. And so I think, especially my generation and younger, Bitcoin is the natural progression from gaming. We're just so used to it. You know, a lot of older people can't get around that concept of having something digitally, having something that you can't touch. It's in basically thin air. So I think that's a very, very common thing about gaming and Bitcoin. And also, I made my game around the concept of Bitcoin and being a hero. So I found lots of different similarities and being, you know, holding, you know, it's the modern day hero. You know, back in the day, you had to, you know, protest and stuff to get things done. But this is like the silent protest, holding Bitcoin.
Do you think it's easier to convince video gamers about Bitcoin or convince Bitcoiners to play video games?
That's a good one. Four. Okay. I think it's probably easier to convince Bitcoiners to play games, especially the ones that have already played games. I think that it's always hard to convert people into Bitcoin. You know, I think all Bitcoiners know this, you know, sitting around the dinner table or just with friends and trying to convince them, it's extremely hard for people to grasp the concept of Bitcoin, as there's so many things to learn and understand about the system. And people don't know that the system is failing and will continue to fail and speed up that process. So yeah, I think it's always definitely hard to convert people. So it's very rewarding when you can actually convert people.
Have you had any interesting kind of interactions with gamers about Bitcoin this past couple of years making this game?
Just a lot of people appreciating the nostalgia. I think that's one of the key things that I love to bring about people, is like bringing people back to their childhood and just bringing that nostalgia feeling. I mean, because when people purchase the game, they get the box, they get the manual, they get the game. It's exactly how you get it as you were a kid.
I can't imagine how it's going to be a little bit of a disorientated feeling for your game, because you're receiving this box and it will look exactly like how they would have received it, probably very similar to what they would have received it decades ago. And it's a game about Bitcoin. They're new passion for the past, you know, 3, 4, 5, 7 years, which is going to be shorter than the existence of the Game Boy when they were playing with it, very likely. So I'm sure some people, at least I would have felt a little bit disorientated and surreal in a good way when receiving this game and playing and kind of having the old and new passion interacting with each other in an interactive way while I'm enjoying as part of it. So that's, I'm sure it's going to be a great feeling. And today, if you were to Orange Pill video gamers, what's something you would say that you think would specifically resonate with gamers?
I just treat everyone, I mean, with gamers, I can't say specifically for gamers because, I mean, I could probably say something about it's, you know, how game currency works, but I don't think there's been a game where they've talked about the fall of the currency, you know? So I think I always bring it back to I'm saying Bitcoin is the solution. I think it's the solution. You might not, but this is the problem. And I always go back to this is what's wrong with the fiat currency, and this is how it's going to continue getting worse. What are you going to do about it? You know, you don't have many options. So that's what I always bring it to.
That's an interesting approach, because what you're doing is that you're even removing Bitcoin from the conversation itself, and you are focusing on the problem, because the problem is either you're into Bitcoin or not. This is something we all need to face regardless, and you can choose to ignore this and then suffer down the, like, kick the problem down the road and then deal with it another day. But someday you will have to deal with it, and when you do, you can either be passive and just put it up and be proactive somehow. And Bitcoin is the somehow. It's almost like when you're pitching something, the the golden formula would be to really introduce the problem and then have the product serve us a solution. So you're, this is something that we can all take note on when, I guess, orange peeling other people, that we can all focus on the problem and leave some space for them to connect the dots between fixing money, fixing the world. And let's talk about the game itself. Hero of Bitcoin, it's your first game, but it's not your creative project. Could you share some of the other creative endeavors you've worked on in the past? Were they related to Bitcoin anyway? You have a day job, and then this is your side passion project, and you're going more into the Bitcoin community in the past couple of years throughout the journey of making this game. So how did you take the leap of faith to create a game? It sounds like a big decision, and sounds like it is. If you took 2 years to carry it out from start to finish, then it's been a quite big project. So what gave you the strength and courage to start this project in the first place?
I think just having really wanting to give back to the community really drove me to I was doing, so my, I'll just share a bit of my journey. I first got popular because I created a pixel art picture for Samson Mo. So his little mini lion character. I made a pixel art for it, and he made it his display picture. And so I first off created some pixel art for some famous Bitcoiners, and then I started charging people to make their display picture in pixel art. I just wanted to be connected to everyone, and having something that I've created and shared with something that's is such a great way to communicate with people and connect with people, and have an excuse to go to conferences and show it off and that sort of stuff. So it was just really wanting to give back, and just day by day, just slowly chipping away at it, you know, like you would anything else. And I think also moving from just being, you know, I think producing stuff in the Bitcoin space, making the economy run, is also just as, if not better, than buying Bitcoin, you know, keeping that circle running, because in order to really, you know, get that Bitcoin economy running, you've got to use it. You've got to have things that people can purchase with. So that's why it was really important, even though it's shooting myself in the foot, making a game, if it's very, very niche for Bitcoiners only, and only be able to purchase it with Bitcoin.
It was a really specific choice how you choose to develop the game on Game Boy. And I'm sure, you shared part of it, it's logistic and how it's you've discovered tools that that enable you to do so. But at the same time, it also brings that nostalgia factor you want to convey in your game and give this warm fuzzy feeling for Bitcoiners to revisit their childhood and combine their childhood and current passion together. So there are many constraints. I'm imagining there are many constraints working with the Game Boy, though, such as you have limited space, and there's the limitation for pixels, and there's the color palette. I heard you can only use 4 colors on a character, and it must be challenging. So I want to gauge your thinking on how did you approach these limitations, and did you find these constraints actually sparked more creativity? Because It were these constraints liberating by reducing your decision-making overload, basically, or restricting, and then you wished you had more options?
You took the words right out of the mouth. So that's exactly what I was going to say. The limitations create creativity, you know? I find if you look at the early games to now, I mean, they're creative, but when you have a limit of what you can achieve, you've got to put your all into that small box. So those limitations have been sort of a blessing as well, because it saves me a lot of time. Instead of me making a huge pixel art character, which would take forever to do a pixelating each frame, I only have to worry about a very small character. Same as the backgrounds. You have a limited amount of tiles you can use in a scene. So it's a unique tiles. So you have to be careful. How am I going to make this background with the least amount of tiles and still keeping it engaging and whatnot. So it's fun. It's sort of a puzzle you got to do in your head. It's been really, really fun.
Do you find constraints working for creativity in general or just in this specific case? Because I'm sure, I can share this thought because when you get into a platform, especially anything, like I'm not a technical person, I'm a musician. So when I'm recently trying to produce it properly on softwares where you can choose the sound, and then you have libraries of these sounds, and I find myself going through these sounds on hours count, because there's always the next one, and then you always want to go through the whole thing to see if there's a better one that suits the specific second. So you end up going kind of pigeonhole yourself and get into details and forget about the bigger picture, and then just get sucked into these just endless creative decisions, basically. So what would you suggest people who are working on creative projects to perhaps even introduce constraints in their creative process?
Well, there's, if you go to a restaurant and there's a menu and you see, 100 things on the menu, it doesn't really help, does it? It's better to have, 5 really good choices. Having a constraint or having a theme to your work is always great for creativity. It makes you think outside the box and think of something unique. Keep making constraints allows you to have a more creative, a very unique touch to your work, So keeping in the limitations of, me for Bitcoin only, Game Boy. I always tried to be, whenever I tried to think of something to do for Bitcoin, I always thought, how can I be first? That everything's being created by people, but Bitcoin's a new frontier. I was trying to be the first one to make a Game Boy game for Bitcoin, or first one to make even a game. There was actually one other person who made a game, but there's not too many people that have finished a production level game for Bitcoin. Just very small games, but I mean like a story based one, So being first is very important. And having your unique touch on something. Otherwise, what makes you different from everyone else,
How important do you think being the first one is? Because sometimes I hear my Bitcoin friends saying, oh, I want to start a podcast, but there are a million Bitcoin podcasts. Oh, I want to start a Bitcoin sticker company, but there are 1,000 Bitcoin sticker companies. How do you suggest people mitigate from kind of get started, even if they are facing competition, or if there's a way somehow that you can suggest they can find something that they're doing for the first time?
Well, it's like you have a very specific theme to your podcast. So having something, a unique touch, even though there's thousands of them out there, what makes you different? What makes people want to come back and watch you that other than someone else? So you might not be as skilled as some other people, but if you have a certain theme or something that really resonates with people, then I think people will come back and follow you.
And you've adapted the approach where you're crowdfunding through platforms like Geyser, and you're getting quite some success. What was your experience working with crowdfunding in Bitcoin?
I can't recommend Geyser Fund enough. It's an absolutely amazing platform. I mean, I probably could have used Kickstarter or whatever, but I really wanted to focus everything on Bitcoin. And I think Geyser does such a good job. Whenever I wanted to have something implemented, they would just do it straight away, and they're constantly updating the website.
Was there any given moment where you were thinking about quitting?
So there was a time. So, and that's why, having Geyser behind my back really helped me to push this game out, because I didn't want to let people down. A lot of people donated early on without any reward. That's what I love about the Bitcoin community, that people really love to support new projects, even though they get nothing in return. And so that really drove me. I went through a really hard time at one point in development, about halfway through. I actually had psychosis. So I literally started to go crazy. And I ended up having to go to the emergency department twice for that. And I thought that I wouldn't be able to work on the game again. And but I kept going at it, and I had a big break from the game. And eventually when I got better, mentally better, I pushed back on.
Wow, that was heroic. it's very kind of echoing back to the theme of the game. And I guess in this case, we're all hero of Bitcoin. We're all heroes of our own reality.
And that's actually the theme of the game. The whole point, and that's what people get confused. People, you know, a lot of people say like, oh, slay your heroes and stuff like that. But the whole point of Hero Bitcoin is that he's just an everyday guy and he's saving the world with Bitcoin, you know? All you have to do is hold Bitcoin to be a hero.
Totally. And it seems like you've definitely have been the hero in your own life and be the push through a lot of the difficulties. So what were Geyser, the people in your community through Geyser or other channels definitely played a huge factor in helping you overcoming this tough period. What are some of the other factors that you think have contributed to you pushing it through and really delivering on the vision?
Well, I have a person who works with me called Mars, and he's the one that actually created the, I got it here. He's helping me create these things. So he's been putting them, I've been doing the artwork and he's been putting these together, the custom Game Boys and other merch. He helped me a lot. He helped me put up the website for which people can play the game and download the demo. He said he had gone through some similar sort of situations and he helped me through as well. So yeah, I really appreciate him and what he's done.
I love talking about decision making and leap of faith on this show because oftentimes we find ourselves taking actions and wanting to do things, but at the end of the day, it will always take that leap of faith, especially if it's something that scares you, if it's something that you've never done. It always comes down to that leap of faith, no matter how much you think you know or how much you feel like you don't know. And especially when you have a lot of things you feel like you don't know, but you still want to do it, then it's all leap of faith. It's all about making the commitment and actually stick to it. In your case, in the extremely difficult times or challenging periods, what was the moment, like what would you think momentarily to motivate yourself, sit down at the table and work on the game when you were, because it's really hard to break out of a difficult mental state of mind and then have that internal motivation and say, hey, I'm going to do something right now. And do you recall any like tips or tricks or what did you tell yourself so that you get up or leave whatever you were doing and come here and sit and work on the game?
Well, before my psychosis, I originally was just going to make this game as an art piece and just make it really short, quick and simple and just get it out there. But going back to it, the game, it just got bigger and bigger because I just had so much passion and was just enjoying it so much. I think when you're doing something, you have to enjoy it. You have to, you know, that's what separates the normal people from, you know, from every industry. The people that are really passionate are the ones that usually go far or do something more. I think after my psychosis, it was a bit of a pressure having other people feeling like they're really looking forward to it and having that in the back of my mind, oh, this will make people, happy, you know, to have something like this. You know I would. So keeping that in the back of mind, having that drive was probably my biggest factor. Having people relying on, you know, wanting to have the game and just that me wanting to finish the game myself and having something under my belt that I could say I've finished it. Yeah.
Do you think you were driven at the time? Were you driven more by the motivation provided from your community or the fear of letting them down?
Oh,
at the time,
I think it's very equal both. You know, I didn't want to let people down, but I also, you know, yeah, both.
I can relate to that. And sometimes when we don't have the mental strength just to say, I'm doing this for myself, for whatever reason, we've all been there. But if we get other people to involve and they know what we're doing and they're looking forward to it, then part of us will be like, oh, I really want to make this for them. Like, I really want to make this happen for them because they are so excited and they want to do this for them. And there are people who are extremely responsible in a work setting, but they can be kind of not putting enough effort when it comes to themselves. Like, people can take extreme care when it comes to job, to professional responsibility, to family duties. But then if they're just by themselves, then they don't eat well, they don't take care of themselves properly, they don't, you know, exercise or try to maintain a healthy state of mind, or neglect on loving ourselves. So do you think when we're working on creative project, because oftentimes I hear two schools of arguments when working on creative projects. One school is that you should not tell people what you're working on until it's done, and then you can show that, because when you tell people what you're doing, you are releasing dopamine, and then you will trick your brain thinking that you've already done that, and then that would basically reduce your motivation and reduce the chance of you actually doing that thing. But then on the flip side, if we, in your story, I'm sensing a great, great influence from your community and how that has helped you getting the required motivation to finish this game. And the flip side here is to broadcast it and really embrace it and share with people, you know, or you don't. Accept that it's not perfect and be vocal about what you're working on. So which side are you on when people creating creative projects?
I definitely was motivated. I think I'm definitely someone who likes to share things. I think I'm maybe a dopamine addict. but it's definitely what actually probably pushed me to finish the game. If I didn't have Gazer and having that behind me, it definitely was something I was continuously thinking about, like not letting people down, having Gazer. And sometimes I sort of wished, oh, maybe I shouldn't have shown people too early. But at the same time, I also wanted to inspire people as well and take people through the process of making a game, which I don't think many developers do. I think they do nowadays. A lot of indie developers do that.
It's basically an accountability checker, because if you don't tell anyone, you're only accountable to yourself. If I want to do it and I didn't do it, then I failed on delivering on my own account. But if you're broadcasting the news and you're receiving donations and you're building a community who are people who are genuinely looking forward to partake in this journey, then we are accountable to way more people to really deliver. So I'm sure your experience here with Gazer and then the whole journey can inspire people to really start building a community and then have the community support them while they deliver on the mission. Creating a game like this, like Hero of Bitcoin, requires significant dedication, and you've spent the past couple years working on the game, finally seeing the finish line. And how do you think this project has changed you? Has this project changed you, first of all, not just as a creator, but also as a person?
Well, I have created things in the past that have taken me a long time, but never this long. I've never focused this long on a project. So I did take over 2 years, and 6 months of that, I actually took 6 months off work and to work just entirely on this. So I think just learning to chip away at something and just slowly, you know, a little passion project, it only takes, half an hour a day, or, you know, every couple of days to eventually create something big, you know. So I think, you know, start small and think big is the motto.
What was the big picture you were thinking before you start? And what were some of the first steps you took when you were starting on the journey?
It all started with just thinking of what sort of story do I want to tell, and I drew inspiration from a lot of games that I really enjoy. Secret of Mana for the Super Nintendo is one of them. Obviously Mario, Legend of Zelda, So the beginning of the game was really just conceptualizing it and then doing testing with the gameplay first before even building anything. So
let's talk to these aspiring creators that's thinking about something on their mind. As someone who has, and you are someone who has merged the world of gaming, Game Boy, and Bitcoin. So what advice would you give to others looking to explore the intersection of their passions with Bitcoin?
I think having a Twitter is such a important thing. Twitter, people constantly giving me, offering stuff on, messaging me, asking stuff. You know, I got huge donations through it. I got basically all these sales have come from Twitter and my viewership on there. So I can't stress enough doing your own marketing is one of the most important things of creating something. If you're after that connection, because even if you're not after just the money, if you're just doing it for fun, which I'm doing too, but having that money behind it also helps you create more stuff and also makes it more important to people, the more valuable it is, you know?
Like, were you a social media person before having your Twitter account? Because do you think you were someone who were just natural sharing your thoughts through a digital space online, or you had it was a learned process for you?
Oh, it's definitely a learned process. I'm not really much of a social media person, but I did do a YouTube channel where I was reacting to Korean music videos back in the day. So I had some following from there. Yeah, it's definitely a learning process, and you can really tell the people who do it well and the people who don't. Yeah, so I recommend learning those skills. There's a lot of resources out there on YouTube and on the internet to learn those skills.
What is your secret sauce to build a community through Twitter?
Secret sauce is yes. Timing. So I time my posts at specific times to get it makes a huge difference in engagement. For me, it's always based on the US time. It's always in mornings in the mornings and then after work. I always find the best times to post and content and always trying to post consistently. Once or twice a day.
It seems like the Geyser community and how the platform is set up really helped you not only financially but also gave you a lot of mental boost to really carry through this whole journey. So what are, besides the tremendous support you receive from the Geyser community, how do you suggest creators to utilize platforms like Geyser or crowdfunding in Bitcoin general to bring their vision to light? And what are some of the, I guess, successful practices you've implemented that has helped this project?
Well, the great thing about Geyser is that you can really do anything. So even if you're wanting to make a classroom and teach people, you need resources, some funds for that. You literally can do anything. And you don't even have to have rewards for them. You can just have it. Some people just want to donate just for the sake of it. You know, there's even fundraisers and you know, stuff for the Palestine and stuff, for food and water and all that going on out there. Having rewards, different rewards and different levels is really, I find really important. You know, having a really cheap option, like just like at $1 and you get your name mentioned in the credits. Or, you know, I had that sort of thing. And having, you know, I didn't really have the time for it, but I was going to do things like you could have a certain amount of people could have their own character in the game and having all these different rewards. And, you know, we even have one of the rewards we had, you know, getting a console with the game and whatnot. So having different levels is really good. You can also have entries where you have different posts and have all your information there. Just the fact that you have a place all in one, a website where you're not, you know, even though you pay a little bit on fees for people who purchase stuff to the team, which is totally worth it. You've got a full website there for you. It's just so easy to use. Can't recommend it enough for anyone who wants to start something. You know, turn from a consumer into a producer, you know?
Totally. And do you think the fact that you offered physical product made a difference
Definitely. I didn't want to go down the rabbit hole of NFTs and all that sort of stuff. I wanted to, even though this game will eventually be released digitally for free, I really wanted to have people have a physical thing they could, because Bitcoiners love to collect. They love to put things, like I'm a big collector. So for me, it was something that I also enjoy. So I thought other people would as well.
From a business standpoint, because when we are creators and we think creators are just creating and they're just being creative, and that's not the case. And oftentimes if you are the solopreneur working on a creative project, it means a lot of the time actually goes to admin, goes to logistics, goes to figuring out problems that are not creativity related. So would you say, like, how in the 2 years of developing this game, at this stage, how would you say your time was divided? So if you have to put a percentage on, let's say, X percentage on developing the game, like the technical side to make it work, versus admin, logistics, marketing, how would you distribute that percentage for you?
That's an interesting way to think about it. Well, the game was definitely the most. It took me forever. But I'm such a social media person, so now so I spent a lot of time on media. Probably advertising would be like maybe 30%, game would be like 60%, and then logistics would be 10%, because I released a demo as well. So it was a good training for the final release, having to bring things together, get different things done, because just for this cart, it was the sticker, the chip inside, the shell of the cartridge, and then the dust cover, and then the printout of the thank you note, and the stand. There's a little stand that it sits on. So just for the demo, it was all that stuff, and bringing them from all different parts of the world together, putting them together, and then packaging them, and then sending them was a really big issue. So I had some help with that. I have a couple of different distributors now, one in the US, and Mars is helping me with Europe. And then on top of that, with the final release, you've then got the manual, the box, and the clear cover and the insert. So there's like 10 things there. Just, you don't think about it. It looks like, just, you know, when people get it, it's just one thing, but 10 different things put together into one.
It's always like that. When you're on the consumer side, you don't overthink it. You see the product, you think that's what it is. But if you're sometimes when the tables turn and you're on the other side of the equation, then things complicate itself by the day, and then you realize. And then I guess I've had a lot more appreciation for a lot of the things when I started to be on the organizing side, on the producing side. So it just goes to show sometimes, but at the same time, when we are looking to create something, we cannot overthink it. And if we think, oh, there's so much more, if I become the creator of something, then people can get scared. The key here is just focus on the vision, and I guess start small. And then what was the first few steps after you've decided that I'm going to make this game? What was the first few things that you did to get started?
The first few things was to think of an idea or concept for the game. And then it was really beta testing the gameplay. So the jumping mechanics, you know, there's different type of mechanics that are used in Mario that people don't even realize. Like there's one, for example, when you run over an edge of a platform, there's a time when you jump that you're allowed to jump, whether you fall off and still allowed to jump, or you can only jump on the platform. So people don't know this, but the main difference why some Marios feel better than others is because they've allowed for it. It actually allows it for when they fall off a little bit, they can jump. It's in your brain, because your brain has a delayed reaction. It feels natural, but it's something you totally don't notice unless you delve into those sort of things.
What is next for you? Now you've finished the development of the game, and are you looking to, what is your vision at this stage for the future of Hero of Bitcoin?
I've been working with Mars to do merch, and we're looking at producing some console. But we're still, that's still in the works. We're still discussing that sort of stuff. right now the most silly thing is there's to get the game out there, but I've actually started working on the second game. So I don't know if I'm going to be able to finish this second game, but I'm going to do my best because this is second game is much more ambitious. It's working just like Zelda, but it's got a bold map. So there'll be vehicles and stuff like that. So you'll be able to run around, attack enemies, and you'll be able to travel the world.
With the endless side quests.
Yes, it's that sort of stuff. So so Hero Bitcoin 1 is very linear, and that makes it much easier to produce because you can control the narratives directly. Whereas in this next game, I want to make it so you can go wherever you want. And I'm still tossing up between ideas and stuff, but I was thinking of a concept where every city you go to is run down in a certain way because of the currency. And you somehow you save that country with Bitcoin by in some way. Yeah. So.
Wow. You're really getting ambitious here. I've never played the Zelda game, but I've heard so much good things about it. And I heard
there's two different types of Zelda games. There's the 3D ones, 2D one. The 2D ones, like top view looking down, and you can go into houses and you can explore and you use a sword to attack and whatnot.
I heard it's a game that you can really get lost in and just choose your way of playing it. Either focus on the main challenges or just go on endless side quests. So it sounds like a really fun and educational as well, and also ambitious project. But I guess you already know what to do. It's to sign up on Geyser already.
Yes. Well, this time I haven't put up on Geyser yet. I'm going to wait a while this time before I do that and fully commit. So for now, it's just a passion project and we'll see where it takes me.
For sure. And looking forward to hearing more updates on this. And how do our audience stay close to your work?
Follow me on Hero at Bitcoin on Twitter is the best way. I also have an Instagram as well, which it's much easier to see all the images and stuff and graphics that I'm sharing.
Amazing. Thank you, Hero, for taking the time to join us today at Live with Bitcoin. I'm very impressed with your progress in the past year and a half since I've been following you and working on this game to this degree. And I didn't know you've had such amazing experience with Geyser. So that was really good to know. And I'm sure your story will inspire people who are in the middle of a creative project, either in or out of Bitcoin, who are kind of just sitting on the bench, having some sort of idea, contemplating, getting to the point where they can commit to start working, showing the proof of work consistently. It's almost like you have to have the faith, and then followed by courage, followed by strength, followed by consistency, and then repeat that process so you get the ground up in whatever you want to achieve in life in many, many different areas. And it seems like you're someone who embodied this approach and have really bring a lot of the interesting aspect of Game Boy, Bitcoin, and video games in general into the global Bitcoin narrative. So really happy for your progress and updates, and super excited to see what you pull off next.
Thank you. And thank you for inviting me on. You're very thorough. I enjoyed this conversation. I had a lot of questions that I've never received before. So it's been great talking to you.
Nice, nice. Thank you so much. And I love asking people questions that I've never received. So that's mission accomplished here. Thanks a lot for taking the time to join. This is Live with Bitcoin. Thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Vivian, and we'll see you in the next episode.